Hi, everyone. I'm Jenna. Welcome to Smarter News. We're going to jump right in and tackle one of the most controversial stories in our news cycle right now involving the name Jeffrey Epstein. And I'm just going to offer this quick disclaimer off the top. We're going to be talking about some sort of tough, sensitive topics. And so if you have mixed company in the room, if you have young ears, if you're having that sort of day that maybe this isn't your thing, I just want to give you a little bit of a heads up. One of my pet peeves about traditional news broadcasts is that you could be listening to a story about the weather and suddenly you get the next story to be a horrific murder and there's no time to prepare. Let's say your family's listening to the news and you're moving from one thing to the next. It also feels very insensitive of the topic. So I'd like to be able to talk about all of our news items in a way where it's very accessible and approachable for your entire family. I think that's also professional. And I'll leave the rest, the graphic stuff, to other people. I just want you to be able to come and get the news from Smarter News. And that's one of the reasons why I actually want to tackle this topic. I was watching this story develop last week when the Department of Justice and the FBI released a memo regarding this investigation, ongoing investigation into the Jeffrey Epstein case and the handling of that case. Obviously, last week, we had a lot of big news around the country regarding the historic Texas flooding, and that took precedent. And I wasn't quite sure where this story would go. But as I've seen this story develop over the last week, and now we have more comments coming from the president, more comments coming from the attorney general, I think this is an opportunity to step into this story and hopefully fill a little bit of a void. Because with this particular topic, it seems that you can go to some destinations to get information, but that already have a point of view. And what I like to be able to do for you is just tell you what's going on and why it matters. It feels very old fashioned, but I feel like it's still what's missing from the many, many options you have when it comes to news. And obviously, we're very dedicated to nonpartisan news coverage, which means we don't have a political agenda, and we're going to apply that here. But there are news items related to this memo and related to cases involving Jeffrey Epstein that is new news this week. So I want to tackle that. And then I want to go back and cover some of the basics about why we're even here in the first place. I will also offer this second disclaimer. I'm not going to offer more than this, but one more disclaimer for this broadcast is, you know, this topic has been the subject of documentaries, of books, of hours and hours, years and years of research. We're going to kind of skim together what seems the most relevant for where we are right now. And I look forward to your comments to see what other questions you may have or where else you'd like us to go from here. But I do value your time and I do value brevity. And so I am going to apply that to this topic. So we do have news this week. We did have news last week. We are going to cover the bigger picture. And before I leap into any of that, I want to talk to you about what's at stake. You know, why does this story matter? And I heard this description on NPR this morning. As you know, I listened to a whole bunch of different news broadcasts, conversations from all sorts of different points of view, because I'm looking to try to gather these different points of view and pull them together for you. When I heard this, I thought it was important to share with you, but just take a listen to it and we'll discuss.
Well, for many conspiracy theorists, Jeffrey Epstein's story is really this striking example of what they believe is a satanic cabal of pedophiles who are entrenched among the world's most powerful people. You know, that is the central belief animating the QAnon conspiracy theory, which also posits that Donald Trump is destined to defeat that cabal. And Trump and his allies have in the past, you know, embraced some of these ideas. Trump promised to release the government's files about Epstein while he was on the campaign trail last year. He appointed FBI leaders who had helped promote conspiracy theories about Epstein and his death. So since the Department of Justice said last week, look, nothing to see here, case closed, many of those who have bought into this conspiratorial worldview, they've been trying to make sense of this administration's backtracking.
Okay, we should have played a game. We could have played a drinking game. Every time you hear the word conspiracy, take a sip of water. We'd be well hydrated. The reason why I wanted to play that for you is it actually is a good summary of how some feel about the Jeffrey Epstein case, that it is more involved. It's not just about this individual, this former financier slash convicted sex offender. It's about something bigger. But tossing it and kind of shrugging this all off as just a bunch of conspiracy theorists that are interested in this story does a disservice to the story. Also, just to note, I believe journalists in general have lost the privilege of using the term conspiracy because it was used a lot during the COVID pandemic to try to get people to stop asking questions. It is true that many have a lot of different ideas about a lot of different things. Some seem very extreme and involved and maybe a little bit unusual. Sure. But part of our job as journalists is to ask questions. Curiosity is key to liberty. And yes, sometimes these questions are more extreme. And yes, it is true that there are some people that believe this about the Jeffrey Epstein case. It is also true that this story could be about nothing about that for some. And what it really begs is the question about whether or not there's a double standard of justice in America. If you're rich and you're famous and you're close to power, are you truly equal under the rule of law? As a member of the elite class, is there a different set of rules that apply to you? Are there things happening amongst those in the elite class that the rest of America, the majority of people, don't have access to or don't understand or somehow are separate from or a pawn in? These are questions that have come up in a variety of different stories. Just a question about those in power and whether or not they're abusing power. And at the center of this story is that question. There are other questions on the periphery. And I just want to acknowledge that. That was a good summary of one. But we're not going to shrug off this story as just that. There's more to it. And there's some questions that should be asked. And if you have questions, you're in a, I don't want to use this term, but you are in a safe space for them. I believe in curiosity. I think it's fundamental to our liberty. And the minute that we're shamed from asking questions is the minute that we start losing a little bit of that liberty. And that's really important to preserve. So just want to say that. That's what's at stake with this story, though, is a question about justice and a question about power and a question about wealth. And we see those dynamics in a lot of the stories that we're covering. Where I want to start first before I leap into some of the news of the week that is also not getting a lot of coverage but involves the Supreme Court is something that I feel is completely underreported and I want to prioritize for you. Yes, you're going to hear the name Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell, his convicted now co-conspirator, according to the federal government. Who you're not going to hear from, not frequently at least, are any victims. And according to this new Justice Department memo, it puts a number to the victims. And I'm going to read it to you here. Consistent with prior disclosures, this review confirmed that Epstein harmed over 1,000 victims. More than 1,000. We don't even have a specific number. We know it's more than 1,000. How much could it be beyond that? Over 1,000 victims. Most of them we're never going to hear from. We're not going to know their names. We're not going to see a picture of them. We're not even going to get an understanding of what potentially happened to them. That's part of the reason, by the way, that the Justice Department is saying that there's not going to be more released on this investigation is protecting these victims. But we're going to prioritize these victims at Smarter News because they're going to get the least amount of attention. And at the core of this case is allegedly this crime that Jeffrey Epstein was never convicted of by the federal government that include harming so many people, so many people. And we're going to acknowledge those victims and we're not going to forget them. Because again, going back to those themes about power and justice and wealth, it's the question of who gets hurt in the process. And now we have a number. We have a number here that gives us an idea of how serious this alleged, again, criminal enterprise was. I keep using that term only because Jeffrey Epstein never went to court. According to the US government, and according to this memo, he committed suicide in prison. So he never had his day in court. And that's the way the justice system works. Innocent until proven guilty. And this is also why this document is really important, because it talks about the seriousness of the crimes, as well as telling the public that we're not going to hear a lot more about it, at least not from this Justice Department. So keep the victims in mind as I'm going to go on to the next part of this story. What is the news that we have this week? Well, we have really interesting news regarding Ghislaine Maxwell. Remember, she's the person that was convicted of several crimes related to activity that federal prosecutors said was in conjunction with Jeffrey Epstein. I'm going to go through a timeline in a little bit to kind of, again, put a foundation under our feet. But she's convicted of these crimes. She's serving time in prison. What she has said and what her lawyers have argued from the very beginning is that she should be protected by a plea deal that Jeffrey Epstein made back in the early 2000s when he was being prosecuted in the state of Florida. And the deal that he made said essentially that anyone that was alleged co-conspirators could not be charged in relation to his crimes that he admitted guilt for. Ghislaine Maxwell's name was not part of this deal. The plea deal also said that he could not be prosecuted by the federal government. So it was an interesting plea deal because it eliminated for the crimes that he was being charged by the state of Florida, he was not going to be charged by the federal government, and his alleged co-conspirators could not be as well. There's been a lot of questions about this deal and how one gets a deal like this. In fact, it's one of those questions that was raised by the Miami Herald a few years ago that sort of led to the reigniting of questions about Jeffrey Epstein in a more in a way that put a media spotlight back on him and arguably led to his arrest and these charges that he faced right before his suicide. So Ghislaine Maxwell's attorney has been saying she's protected. She's protected because of this deal. Now, there's been two judges that have said that's not the case. Nope, you have to face the music. These charges were different. The federal prosecutors did charge Ghislaine Maxwell in New York and charge her for crimes going back many, many years related to Jeffrey Epstein. She's been convicted. But her lawyers appealed to the Supreme Court. And the news this week was that our government, so the Department of Justice, had to respond to these lawyers appealing to the Supreme Court. So if you have a lawyer and you're appealing to the Supreme Court, you can do so. You have a filing. And then the Justice Department would have to file a response. And there was a deadline that the Justice Department had to do that this week, and they did. Obviously, they disagree with the argument by the attorneys for Ghislaine Maxwell. And we have no idea whether or not the Supreme Court will take up this case. The Supreme Court gets, I mean, tons and tons of the cases get appealed to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court takes very, very few. There's no timeline or sort of tea leaves that are going to suggest whether or not the Supreme Court gets involved here. But it is interesting that you could see a case related to Jeffrey Epstein potentially wind up before the Supreme Court. Not likely because these other judges have been consistent, but you never know. You never know. And that could happen here. So just even knowing that that news is taking place, I think is important because it's not getting as much attention as what I'm about to talk to you about next, which is this memo, this U.S. Department of Justice Federal Bureau of Investigation memo that came out last week. Quick side note, by the way, sort of interesting. I thought you would find this interesting. You know, one of the laws that Ghislaine Maxwell was prosecuted, one of these crimes that she was prosecuted for and convicted for ties back to the Mann Act. I recorded a short broadcast on this right before the trial of Sean Combs, P. Diddy, because he was being prosecuted because of the Mann Act, which is a 100 plus year law that has stood that is put in place to prevent the transporting of individuals across state lines for the purpose of committing a crime. This comes up in sex trafficking cases. And so Ghislaine Maxwell was successfully prosecuted because of that law. And that's the same law that you see that was a part of the P. Diddy trial and case. Also R. Kelly and several others. So it's one of those laws that keeps coming up. It's a federal law. And that's why we see it in a federal court. That's also why in a federal court, we don't have video in the courtroom, so we don't have as much access as other cases. So just sort of an interesting thing just to make note of. So let's talk about this memo from the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI. What this memo says in summary, and I'm going to read a little bit of it to you, I'm also going to link to it, is that there's no there. That after many years of questions about what really was going on with Jeffrey Epstein, and whether or not he was connected to other people, whether or not he was committing crimes with other people, whether or not there was a broader conspiracy of sorts. And I'm using that in a legal way, not in an editorial way. What they're saying is that there's not that. There's all these questions about Jeffrey Epstein. Did he actually commit suicide? Does he actually have a client list of some sort? Meaning that did he commit crimes? And then was he committing these crimes on behalf of other people in a secret way, even a secret society? Like what was actually happening here behind closed doors? And what do we need to know about it? And again, why does that matter? Well, how did this happen? How did this happen that you had more than 1,000 victims and someone that was so close to power? How does this take place? And so this was a question that has come up specifically in conservative circles, although others, it hasn't been totally along political party lines, but there's definitely been more of an interest coming from conservatives and those that support President Trump and do see him as an antidote to the big state or government that's been protecting itself and not really working for the people. So this memo comes out from the Trump administration, and it surprises people because those that are in position of power now in the Justice Department and at the FBI and in the White House have talked about this case and raised questions and helped add fuel to the fire of more questions of, is there something happening in the background here that the American people do not know about? And by the way, if this administration can't get to it, then who's going to get to it? This is the way that some of the supporters of President Trump have felt and have expressed, especially those in higher profile media positions, you know, that are have commentary and are wondering, well, what's actually happening here? We were told one thing before these folks were in position of power. Now they're in position of power. And wait a minute, have they been sucked in by the quote unquote deep state? Like, what's going on here? So let me just read for you just a little bit. Again, I'll link to it. It's not long. It's a page and a half. And the brevity of it is part of the story. So let me just read to you this one paragraph. It talks about how much material in general investigators have gone through, kind of rehashing part of the investigation that took place into him in the first place. The files relating to Epstein, here I'm reading, quote, the files relating to Epstein include a large volume of images of Epstein, images and videos of victims who are either minors or appear to be minors, and over 10,000 downloaded videos and images of illegal child sex abuse material and other pornography. Teams of agents, analysts, attorneys, and privacy and civil liberties experts comb through the digital and documentary evidence with the aim of providing as much information as possible to the public, while simultaneously protecting victims. Much of the material is subject to court-ordered sealing. Only a fraction of this material would have been aired publicly had Epstein gone to trial, as a seal served only to protect victims and did not expose any additional third parties to allegations of illegal wrongdoings. This is important. It did not expose any additional third parties to allegations of illegal wrongdoings. That's important because it didn't involve other people. Through this review, we found no basis to revisit the disclosure of those materials and will not permit the release of child pornography. This systemic review revealed no incriminating client list. There was also no credible evidence found that Epstein blackmailed prominent individuals as part of his actions. We did not uncover evidence that could predicate an investigation against uncharged third parties. So there's no client list. There's no evidence he's part of something bigger or broader. There were some that have floated this idea that Epstein worked for a foreign government, specifically the Israeli government, and was acting on behalf of them as a spy in some way, and was getting people into compromising positions and blackmailing them for information. This is another theory that's been out there as well. So no, that didn't happen. And by the way, there's not going to be anybody charged for this. So case closed. That's the end. That's what the memo says. So this is very this provides a juxtaposition to what others have said, including those in position of power, like the FBI director in the past, of saying, hey, this information is all out there. We got to give it to the public because the public should be able to see what was going on here behind closed doors. And now those same people are saying, nope. I mean, there's no case there, but you're still not going to see anything. So that's raising the question, which is, okay, well, there's no cases. If there's no cases, can we protect the victims? And can you also just share this information with us? Also, I just want to mention this term minor or child pornography obviously conjures up, just a horrible, dark, evil crime. But it's also vague in that it's our understanding based on past legal prosecution of Epstein that we're talking about teenagers. And I just want to mention that because child pornography, I mean, when I think child, I think of a really young child. And that's a question that this actually raises, is that we don't know anything about the victims. We don't know, are all of them minors? How old, what was the youngest? Who are these people? Like, are they okay now? Who are they? You know, and yes, we want to protect the victims, but we get very little information when the language like that is vague, it can lead to some other thinking. And so I cannot confirm or deny that, but I just wanted to mention that to you because it's the first thing I thought when I read it. I was like, child pornography, this is like, what are we actually talking about here? What's also important in this story, though, and gets lost, and what I want to review real quick here for you, is that Jeffrey Epstein faced some similar charges in 2005 that he faced by federal prosecutors in 2019. And that was related to crimes in the early 2000s, maybe even late 1990s. What is interesting about what we've learned about Epstein, including with the Ghislaine Maxwell case, is that even the crimes that she was convicted of date, according to federal prosecutors, to like 2005 and before. It's not recent activity, like in the last, you know, 15 years, but that's a long period of time. And he was around a lot of people in power. So are we to believe that no crimes were committed, only the crimes were committed until 2005, 2006, 2007, when he had this plea deal with the state government in Florida, and then never committed another crime again? This is why these memos are bringing up, this memo in particular is bringing up questions. So just quickly in review, in 2005, police in Palm Beach, Florida began investigating Epstein after a 14-year-old girl reported she was molested by him at his Florida mansion. In 2006, he was arrested because of a grand jury investigation. So his peers, you know, jury of your peers, prosecutors put this in front of them and they said, yeah, go get that guy, arrest him and charge him under a single count of soliciting prostitution. The FBI is starting to investigate at this point, but we're still in 2006. So we're talking about almost 20 years ago that this took place. In 2007, under a secret non-prosecution agreement, a plea deal, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Florida agrees not to prosecute Epstein for federal crimes. They're going to prosecute him for state crimes. In exchange, Epstein agreed to plead guilty to the state indictment against him and another charge that requires him to register as a sex offender. So he was a registered sex offender at the time of his death. He also had to pay monetary damages as well. And so also in addition to this deal is this additional deal for co-conspirators. So let co-conspirators happens at that time. In 2008, Epstein pleads guilty to two Florida state charges, soliciting prostitution and soliciting prostitution from someone under the age of 18. He is sentenced to 18 months and serves most of his sentence in a work release program that allows him to go to work during the day. From 2009 to 2019, multiple women come forward. They say that Epstein, they're saying that they are Epstein victims in an attempt to get that federal non-prosecution agreement voided. So it basically, this is the power of a plea deal. You know, basically eliminated these victims from being able to seek justice. And they were saying like, wait a minute, we deserve justice. And a few of them, just a handful of them, come forward. At this time, as they're coming forward, a few of them describe in interviews that they felt that they were a pawn and being used by Epstein, not just abused by him, but set up to be abused by other rich and powerful men. That's where that story comes from. It comes from those victims telling that story, and it is their account. So this is part of how we start moving towards in this period from 2009 to 2019 is, wait a minute, was there a misprosecution here? And should Epstein have gone in this sort of a deal? So in July of 2019, Epstein is arrested on federal sex trafficking charges in New York City. That's where he had one of his residents. After New York federal prosecutors conclude that they're not bound by the terms of that Florida agreement. And this goes on. So he's arrested in July. He commits suicide, according to investigators, in August of 2019. And then the next year, that's when Ghislaine Maxwell is charged with a series of crimes, including conspiracy, sex trafficking of a minor, enticing a minor to travel to engage in illegal sex acts, transporting a minor with the intent to engage in criminal sexual activity. Those are all related to crimes that took place between 1994 and 2004. So I think that's also really important to know. Not only was Epstein convicted of crimes related to some of these questions that of other crimes that he committed. But this was really in this investigation that took place, crimes took place 20 years ago. And that does raise the question of, were there no other crimes ever committed? What about this timeline? And because of that, I just wanted to flag that for you as well. So now we sit with a couple things. Is it possible that the Supreme Court takes a look at this case for Ghislaine Maxwell? It is possible. It is unlikely, but it's possible. So that's something to have in mind. And there's always now this question of, is this really the end? with this Department of Justice memo saying the public's not going to get any more information, is this truly the end? There's no more new information coming about Jeffrey Epstein. Well, because of sort of this critique, I'm just going to cover this very briefly, this the political side of this story. President Trump, Attorney General Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel have all been facing questions about their decision here. And I just want to play for you what the president said just yesterday when he's asked a question about, you know, what do you know about these this decision by the Justice Department? Here's what he says.
She's given us just a very quick briefing. And in terms of the credibility of the different things that they've seen, and I would say that, you know, these files were made up by Comey. They were made up by Obama. They were made up by the Biden, we went through years of that with the Russia hoax, with all of the different things that we had to go through. We've gone through years of it, but she's handled it very well. And it's going to be up to her. Whatever she thinks is credible, she should release. Yeah.
So that's part of a description that we haven't really heard a whole lot about in the past about, wait a minute, this is very similar to the Russia hoax. Like that sort of linking of those stories by the president isn't something that was, you know, he's repeated for years. Not according to my reporting, I could have missed something, but that sort of turn and his pretty strong defense, even on Truth Social, of saying, wait, why are people worried about this Epstein case? Like, there's no there. Like, that's it. We looked into it. We didn't find anything. We told you we're going to look into it. We did. This is our decision. And could it be true? This is important to also consider this angle. You know, when people are not in positions of power and they're not close to the material, they can say anything they want. When they get close to some material, they're in a position of power. They may have different calculations. They may make other decisions. And I have to also ask the question, is this strategic in some way? We're not going to release these files because, or any more about this case, because really we have our eye on something else that we learned. And no one's asking that question. And I would like to ask that question. Did you discover something in this investigation that is aiding you in a separate investigation that's on the surface unrelated? Seems like a question we should ask. Here is Attorney General Pam Bondi. She was speaking at an event that was very interesting. I'm going to cut some sound for you from it, actually completely unrelated. It's about illicit drugs coming into the country. She was doing this event with the DEA Drug Enforcement Agency. And of course, one of the first questions during this open press conference was about this topic and had nothing to do with drugs. And this is what she had to say.
This today is about fentanyl overdoses throughout our country and people who have lost loved ones to fentanyl. That's the message that we're here to send today. Nothing about Epstein. I'm not going to talk about Epstein.
So she went on to say, you know, she has a very close relationship with the FBI. She spent a lot of time with the FBI director. She feels she has a full confidence in the president. I'm just sort of summarizing. But this story isn't really going away. And in a recent interview with a podcaster, Benny Johnson, Speaker Johnson of the House, no relation, from what I know, although I should ask Betty Johnson that, said, well, I think more things should be released. So there are Republicans that are in sitting office right now that are also saying, well, wait a minute, you're going to have to give us more than that. You can't just say there's no there. We're not going to do anything. You can't see anything. The end. Not after years of questions. It's not going to work for the public. It is an interesting, just from a media perspective, and, you know, one of the things I find really fascinating as a journalist is the way people tell stories, the way that they share information. And after so many years of doing this job, you know, I always am watching, well, when are people releasing things and how are they releasing things? And as some of you know, I'm always suspicious when something gets released on a Friday afternoon because we know that it's not going to really hit the news cycle until Monday. Yes, we have 24-hour news rooms, but a lot of people check out on the weekend. So if I want something to go away or I'm announcing layoffs or I'm doing something that's not particularly popular, I'm going to put it out on a Friday afternoon. It's an old trick. It's been around for years. It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, whatever. Corporations use it. So I do find that kind of interesting timing of things, and seeing this memo be released on what it looks like it was released first to Axios, a news site that has close ties to Washington, D.C., not necessarily administrative, friendly of the administration, but not necessarily antagonistic. According to my reading of this, they were the first ones that had access to the memo. The memo was very difficult to find. Again, released on a Sunday night, but it was a weekend of July 4th. There was also a huge historic flood that took place in Texas. There were a lot of media outlets and outlets and focus on obviously a really important story. I thought that was sort of curious. You know, on a Sunday night, you're going to release it. Also, Sunday night wouldn't be what I choose because then it's going to push into the leading story of the week. But if I did want to sort of not get a lot of attention, I might release it during a time when there's a much bigger story that's very obvious. And it is hard to cover a memo like this when you're talking about, you know, a deadly event. So one of the ways that you could avoid critique, and I'm not giving this advice to this administration, but I'm just thinking through this, is that instead of saying there's nothing here, you could have said, well, here's three things that we learned, or here's three things that we think are important for the public to know, or here's one more. Like, you could give people a little something. Part of this memo is like, there's nothing. There's a little video of like outside of Epstein's jail cell as investigators are again saying that he committed suicide and there's no foul play. But other than that, there's not much. And that's what leads me to my final question, which leads me back to our very first point. One of the reasons why we cover stories like this is because of those bigger questions about power and justice and how to prevent something bad from happening again. Our U.S. Justice Department has come out and said that there were more than 1,000 victims. The question is, how did that happen? How did we as a society allow that to happen? How did our legal system not catch that? How did the criminal system not catch that? How did communities not catch it? How do we prevent it from happening again? What about these victims? How do we make sure it doesn't happen again? And without more information, it's really hard to tackle that topic, because then it begs the question, are we really saying, and this is what the Justice Department is saying, that there's more than 1,000 victims and there were only two people involved, Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, and not another soul? That's what they say. The question is, what do you believe? You know, and we can keep asking that question. So I'm curious about that. What do we learn from this to make sure this doesn't happen again? If this is just truly a one-off with two people, we'd like to know, what can we learn from this? So curious, your questions and comments. Hopefully you find this a little bit helpful. It's a mix of a report, a little bit of a reporter's notebook, where we take a look at how the information is being provided and delivered. Again, a tough topic, but hopefully you feel a little bit more equipped on it about why this story continues. And I really wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, about where it goes from here. You know, some are even calling for the resignation of the Attorney General, or even just pontificating about it. So does it reach that sort of level, or does this go away? Just like the Justice Department is putting on paper. So more as we get it, I'll cover this as it comes along. Are there pieces to the story you would like to hear more about? I'd love to hear that from you. It's like Choose Your Own Adventure News. Let me know, and I could go do a little bit more investigating and reporting. But I hope you find this helpful, and I look forward to your questions and comments, and we'll always have more on smarternews.com. Thank you for your support of Quick, Concise, Nonpartisan Smarter News. Have a great day, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Thank you for believing in Quick, Concise, Nonpartisan Smarter News. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news, and we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.